In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Sometimes it just seems like a lot of what we think we know, we really don't. Or at least our perceptions of things seem off. The Democrats exploit that, and they are devious and clever about twisting your view of reality to try to make you accept theirs. Words are important. Language literally shapes how and what we think of the world and society we live in. Isn't it interesting that in Genesis 2, one of the first things God had Adam do, even before Eve came along, was to name the animals? Why was that so important? Because words, language, ties our physical reality to our brains. They're anchor points. We can't think about reality or shape our world if we don't have the words to comprehend it. Perhaps this is why the left spends so much time destroying words, changing them as if words have no meaning at all and can just be easily substituted with whole new meanings. And that's because they're desperate to force you to think like they do, and the only way to do that is to redefine your reality by redefining the words you use to shape and interpret it. It's an attempt to create distrust between you and your reality, especially to distrust the morals and ethics that are formed when you have a true and accurate perception of reality. And once that wedge of distrust is formed, they can rush in to cull the vulnerable. It's abusive. In reality, you are not a woman simply because you think you are. Nothing can change that. Every cell in your body knows who you are. We're told that the means to protect yourself, guns, aren't safe. Strange. I have never yet seen video evidence of a gun walking outside a house and doing random shootings. Reproductive rights have nothing to do with reproduction and everything with stopping it. When you look at how much the left has undermined our society, and at the roots of those attacks, they're attacks on the language and the words we use to make sense of it all. Well, now that we've got your thinking cap on, let's dive into today's show. I'd like to welcome Mark Thielman back to the show. He is an activist advocate for all the issues that we're going to talk about today, education, school choice, and election integrity, promoting all of those and more. Mark, it's great to talk to you today.
Well, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are directly involved with the issues that we're going to talk about today, but remind our audience about the various pots you have your hands in and are helping stir.
Well, obviously, I'm doing the chief petitioner on the school choice, and it's actually two petitions, school choice and open enrollment. And it's really a parents' rights issue. It's about making sure that parents get to direct the pathways for their children and also allows people to get their child into the educational program that's going to fit them best. And it doesn't necessarily, a lot of people say it attacks public schools. No, on the contrary, it strengthens public schools.
Yes.
And public schools will continue to be an important player in the game, but it really does set the parents up as the key directors of their child's education.
Absolutely. And what do you do on the election integrity front?
Well, on the election integrity front, work with Battleground Oregon, and they filed an election integrity lawsuit, of course. And we just submitted our opposition to the motion to dismiss, and it has really, really caught fire. I was surprised at how excited people got about that, because our long-term strategy, as you know, we went through a few iterations and we amended the complaint. The goal was that the state would say, you know, they're not proving enough election fraud, they don't have standing, and their feelings aren't actionable. And that was the goal from the get-go, and that is exactly where they landed. And then, so we were able to hit them with Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas, which was a landmark Supreme Court case based completely on people's feelings. In other words, the psychological impact, the lack of confidence that segregation was creating between white children and black children. And so believe me, the government has taken notice. That's from all the scuttlebutt we're hearing. They did not see that one coming.
Huh. So remind our audience, or those who haven't heard it, about your experiences at LC School District, your successes there during COVID when just about all the other schools were failing at it, and most importantly, what it was like dealing with or fighting with the state.
Well, I mean, it was an ongoing nightmare where you had to not only stay focused on a daily basis of running a complex school district like a K-12 charter school, because, you know, we had online programs and we had other localized programs, you know, little small schools in other districts that COVID necessitated. But then you had to deal with the constant changing of the rules, which were blatantly obvious, designed to close ALC down because we were making the state look bad. Remember, COVID was supposed to be this catastrophic thing, and you know, it certainly wasn't pleasant, but school children were not the vulnerable recipients of the disease that they originally tried to promulgate. So, you know, you can imagine the political impacts of that. And so obviously I had to stand alone. There was no professional association. I had no colleagues stand with me. And, you know, I had to work to keep my own administrators focused. But the overall result where kids were connected to in-person learning, families were protected, and those kids in ALC were spared the massive amounts of damage that is now clearly verifiable. That so many, you know, hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of kids suffered. So I feel real good about it. And, you know, you had to stand against the mob, the local, the state, and the federal. But I would go back and do it again. And it just shows what can be done when an administration and school board stay focused on their mission, which is to educate kids and support parents and families and their individual children.
Well, as you mentioned, pretty much all of their recommendations turned out to be wrong. Masks turned out to be wrong. Distancing did not help. Even the vaccines put more kids at risk than they helped. And it's even been proven now, just this week, that the CDC lied about data, overestimating grossly so. In a report out of University of California, San Francisco, the COVID deaths and COVID's actual danger to children. And but getting back as to why you were the only one standing up, was it, I mean, you've got all of these other school superintendents out there. Is it a matter of personality, or have they just been so conditioned that they just have to follow the rules and can't speak up?
Well, it's a lack of, lack of spine. There's some courage that was lacking. There's no question about that. You know, the impacts to your long-term career by doing the things that I did are pretty substantial if you want to stay in the industry and have colleagues and be accepted. And I cannot explain to people enough the toxic and broken culture that is guiding our public schools. And you are either in or you're out. And, you know, people were fearful. They're worried about going to lose their retirement. They were, you know, if they didn't get the jab, they were worried they're going to get fired. I mean, it was amazing watching the weird, erratic behavior of so many of my otherwise professional colleagues.
Well, we definitely need spine right now here in Oregon. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Coming back, Tina Kotek thinks she needs even more power. Stay with us. More with Mark Thielman. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Mark Thielman. He's the former superintendent of the ALC School District, the only school district that managed to stay open during all of COVID and did not have a single case of COVID traced back to it, and also saw their enrollment increase by 500%. So, Mark, we're talking about a couple of things today, mainly about education and the fight to get school choice on the ballot, but also about election integrity. But there was an article recently that came out from OPB that said, it's titled, "Lawmakers Weigh Kotek Plan for More State Authority Over School Districts. Skeptics call it a seismic shift." And it's astonishing to think that Tina Kotek, who, thanks to John Kitzhaber and poorly thinking Oregon voters, made the governor also the state superintendent of schools, somehow thinks she needs even more power. But that's modern day Democrats for you, I guess. But I'd like to just read this little quote here from it. "Oregon lawmakers are considering a bill, SB 1045, that would provide a stick to go with the carrots by giving the Oregon Department of Education greater authority over school districts when it comes to ensuring they're following state rules and regulations. It's an effort led by Melissa Goff, who was so horrid," that's me, not OPB saying that, "was so horrid and power hungry in the Albany School District that they actually ran her out of town. She is Kotek's education advisor on this," and that's like Stalin advising Chairman Mao. But what do you know about all of this? Does the governor need more power to rein in schools?
No, that's an easy question to answer. What's driving this is that there was what I call a bogus Secretary of State audit done kind of post-COVID about the state of the public schools. And of course, it noted all of the normal stuff. The enemy of public education, the reason it's so bad, isn't because we shut schools down for almost 2 years or threw out all standards and told kids that as long as they put their time in, they'll graduate. And then we turn around and wonder why kids can't read, write, and they lack skills. Instead, it's because of local control. Hmm. The local control is the problem. I mean, think about that. Local control is what makes each individual school district a little different than the one next to it. You have a school board, you have administration, they have some flavor, they have different priorities, they might have a different demographic that they're serving, and that's not okay for Tina. So what she wants is 100% compliance to whatever woke leftist agenda that they want to push, and then they want to commit people to that, or you get run. It's a way to purge. You get run out of education. Mm. So education is not for you because you don't agree with our narrative or our agenda. That's, and they're using that audit as a crisis creator to say that she has to have all this power or we're not going to be able to educate kids. And there, nothing could be farther from the truth.
Hmm. Well, the way that this would work from that article, it essentially authorizes the Department of Education to identify districts as non-standard if they're in violation of laws or rules related to student health, safety, discrimination, special ed, or access to education. And then it goes through a series of labeling and another series of rounds where they're trying to get people to be into compliance and they have to explain themselves, come before the education and beg for forgiveness and whatnot. But there's this, the State Education Department already has the power to withhold state funding in extreme circumstances, but under SB 1045, state officials would have greater flexibility to block or limit various state funding sources under what Goff described as a, quote, more targeted improvement approach. That sounds really dangerous and not something that I want this governor or any governor really to be able to have that kind of power.
Let me be real direct, knowing Melissa Goff the way that I do. This bill is might as well be a chapter out of the diary of a middle school mean girl. So what she's saying is schools like Alcee that stood up and represented their values and the values of the community and the people that they served would be declared non-standard. You're now out. And we now have the right to say these districts are good and those districts are bad. And if you want a good label from us, by God, you better do what we say. There is no better example of bully behavior than this bill, and that is an exact window into the heart of Melissa Goff and Governor Tina Kotek. They are dark-hearted people. They do not value parents. They value compliance and government authority.
Well, it's so funny that you constantly hear about the problem of bullying in schools, and yet this is exactly what they're trying to do, except now they have the power of government behind them to do it. So Tina thinks that she needs even more power. What would that have looked like for Alcee School District under this kind of situation?
Well, what it allows them to do is do two things. One, sick the media mob on us. So they would have done that sooner. Okay. I mean, obviously we had media coverage, but it wasn't necessarily hostile. It was more like, are you sure this is a good idea? But instead it would have been media that would have been directed with a narrative. You know, you're non-standard, you're doing harm, you hate whatever idiosyncratic aspect of
I think they call that rabid.
Yeah. And I mean, think about the culture that creates. If these are adults wanting to set up this system of governance, and I got news for everybody. This is why Melissa Goff was kicked out of GAP, because she wanted to treat kids this way.
This is really the opposite of what you would do in business when there's a problem. When there's a problem with, like, say, manufacturing, you go to the people closest to that problem and you get their input and give them the ability to fix it. This is all top down. We know better than you, and you better do what we say or you're going to get fired or all these other kind of sanctions. I mean, to me, this is not going to fix any problems other than maybe make a few more people lose what little spine they already have.
Yeah, and that's okay, because remember, there will be people that don't agree with this, and then they will be pushed out of education, and in their place will be more incompetence, more compliance-based people, more leftist progressive agenda, which will only lead to more division in communities and more aggressive exodus from public schools. they will harm the very institutions they're trying to protect.
Yep. Well, to me, this bill is just a massive advertisement as to why people need school choice. Would the current school choice initiatives shield charter and other such schools from the state's abusive overreach in this bill?
Absolutely. And what it does is it's a constitutional amendment. So it's the highest form of protection that you can have under state law is state constitution. So it amends the constitution. And what it does is it basically says that parents are the curators of their child's education. So there's a Supreme Court precedent in 1925 when Oregon was trying to force all kids to go to public school. It was a big nationwide Supreme Court case. And the judge said, children are not the mere property of the state, that they actually belong to their parents, and parents have to be consulted and they have to be equal partners in the process. And so this is long established, and the Democrats in general and the people opposing this, the union folks, they're well aware of that, but they never want people to know that that's the case. So the Oregon Constitution says parents are the ones in charge of their children, and that's what this does, is it takes that and it puts it directly into the Constitution, and it provides a funding mechanism and a whole host of options for parents to choose from if they want to participate in the program at all.
Well, like I said, I think this is just such a massive advertisement as to why we need that for sure. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Mark Thielman after this. Back. This is the I Spy Radio Show. Talk today to Mark Thielman. He's a former superintendent of the Alsea School District. He's also the chief petitioner to get real school choice on the ballot. Two petitions there, and he's also a chief rabble-rouser in a lot of other areas as well, including election integrity that we're going to be coming back to in a little bit here. Mark, I wanted to talk to you about the school shooting this week at the Covenant School. It was a private Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee. She was a 28-year-old transsexual identifying as man who still lived at home with her parents. Surprisingly, the left immediately jumped in to defend her, almost as if she was justified in shooting adults and kids. The leftist news media blamed her parents for rejecting her, which is odd, given that they'd been letting her live at home. So I'm not sure how much that's interpretation versus reality. But as a former school superintendent, did you have any thoughts on this? I'm sure seeing things like this in the news has to hit close to home to you.
Well, it's a difficult thing to really break down when you're looking at it's a clash between reality. Mm-hmm. What is the biological facts of birth? You're born male, you're born female. Those are real issues. That's called reality. And the fact is that you have a transgender person, if you will, who was receiving basically emotional help and support with therapy. So obviously there's some mental illness involved, and you can think about the motivations of this person. So she had been taught that her gender was fluid, she didn't have an identity, that God and morality aren't so, and that the system itself is steeped in hatred against her, specifically Christianity and the church, and anything that she perceives might reject her parents, you name it. And nothing in reality supports that. See? In reality, if you think about it, this person went into a school to right some wrong due to their own mental illness. And it doesn't matter if you're transgender or any other idiosyncratic human being. Evil is evil. Yes. And this person did evil and no greater tragedy. Okay, it's a great tragedy. Those 3 9-year-old children, they are innocent. They have done nothing. They did nothing wrong. They were going to school. And so what's even more despicable is the way the left downplayed the impact of the mm-hmm. death of those 3 children and those mm-hmm. 3 teachers, and the way they played it off as it's society's fault, it's the parents' fault. Transgender, we stand with you. There's 2 tragedies. There's the tragedy of the school shooting and the tragedy of non-acceptance of transgender. It's all make-believe on the transgender side.
Right.
And that's the comedy of it. And if there is any comedy in it, now what has it created? It's created this massive narrative now of, transgender people are now going to be attacked because of this school shooting. I've never seen anything so irrational in my life. So we need to stay with reality. What happened was a huge tragedy. Mm-hmm. We had a mentally ill person who purchased firearms and went in and did evil.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just thought it was so odd that the leftist media just swooped in so quickly to support and justify her actions. I mean, I never thought I'd see the leftist Daily Mail effectively come to support a mass murderer, but I guess for the left, sexuality is more important than morality. No, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but transgender people in the left's mind don't have power. So therefore, since they're victims, they don't have power, they're victims, therefore they can't do evil. And that's the thing. And if they do evil, it must be because they're a victim of something, either the system. Yeah. And that's what's sick about this. It is unbelievably detrimental to the future of our society if we don't start having real, rational, honest conversation about reality.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, reports I'm seeing are that this shooting was very well planned out. She was mapping the school and its entrances, buying the guns in advance. Is this something that was going to happen no matter what? And how do we deal with this kind of mindset? I mean, this is not someone who valued life. I don't think it's coincidental that the state and federal government ran God and church and Christianity out of schools and introduced health clinics run by Planned Parenthood into schools. And now we have these kinds of events. Because I never remember a single school shooting happening when I came up through the schools in the 70s and 80s.
Well, this person was 28 years old, but clearly struggled with their own individual value, worth, and identity. Mm-hmm. And it is not our place to judge anyone other than to look at the intent of the action of that individual. And, of course, the media says, well, it's a transgender person, so this negates our narrative. So talk about everything except the fact that we had a mentally ill individual who was gender confused and suffering. And these are facts. And so the thing is, the media comes out, and what do? They literally try to say, literally, that that the Christians, in essence, deserved it. Not a hate crime, and that we don't know the motivation, but the person has a manifesto that was left that the police finally leaked out a little bit of. And the manifesto clearly says this is a hate crime. And so this is what happens. That when we put our make-believe political ideology ahead of facts, the damage that gets done is incomprehensible.
Yes.
And it's gonna go way beyond this incident.
Yeah.
Our president, the Democrat Party, they need to go look in the mirror.
Yeah, absolutely. Two things there. One, I am curious what their reaction would have been had this been an attack on a Muslim school versus a Christian school, because then they would have swooped in to say that these Muslims are victims and whatnot. So very interesting had that happened. But also, as far as the trans people and the left's embrace of that, I feel sorry for these people, because I think you're going to see more of this kind of violence come forward because, as you say, they do feel somewhat powerless. And that's natural, because you were never going to find peace chasing a reality that simply is not real and can never be real. But what kinds of training and drills did you go through at ALSEI to prepare for something like this?
Well, you know, we cut through all the crap. I'm sorry, and I don't mean to talk harshly, but the all of the lockdown drills and the things that the state tries to encourage us to do, none of that works in reality.
Hmm.
In reality, someone comes in, starts shooting, you're going to have chaos. So what I told the staff were the facts. If you hear shooting far away, get the kids and go. We had, get them off campus. If somebody comes in your room and intends to do you or someone harm, you fight them. And then we had designated staff, myself included. Our job was to go to the shooting and try to take out the attacker. That was our job. And that's how we did it. And it was amazing how the debate just died down at that point.
Mm.
Teachers were empowered to defend themselves. If you can't run, you lock the door. If they break in, you fight them.
Yeah.
That is the reality of it. And to couch it any other way, to say that the police, when you have seconds to live, the police are going to be minutes away.
Exactly.
I mean, we're out in ALSEI. Police are more than minutes away. So the reality of it is you have to empower everybody. And that's what some of these bills that are moving along, hopefully they'll get some traction. which is to fortify schools and to give teachers training and to try to reorient the system to focusing on how it can defend itself and its children more proactively.
Well, it sounds like rather than
just be an open target.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you were taking all the right steps, because that gets right back to what I was saying earlier about in business, what you would do is when there's a problem, you go to the people that are closest to those to that problem and enable them. And you certainly did that with your teachers. Okay, let's go and take a break. We're going to continue talking about school safety and then coming up, election integrity, all that with Mark Thielman. We're talking today to Mark Thielman, an advocate and activist for education, real school choice. He's the chief petitioner for that and for election integrity. We'll be talking about that coming up here. But Mark, we were talking in that last segment about the school shooting that happened there in Nashville, Tennessee, and you're leading us in the path that we want to go here. But before we get to some of these bills, how well are Oregon schools, on the average, you think, prepared to deal with these kinds of events and shootings?
Well, they're completely unprepared. Hmm. You know, this is what happens when you push non-reality and you don't want to have hard conversations with real people. And you know, the fact that the police are going to protect you or that a lockdown is going to somehow save you, the evidence is overwhelming that those kinds of things don't work. You really have to take it a different way and empower your staff. Even your older students, you know, we would have conversations with high school students. They were old enough to understand the concept. You know, they get the news on their cell phone just like adults do. And it's amazing how you create a culture that actually protects you as a school. Because, see, that verbiage goes out. Well, in our school, there's people designated to take out the shooter. At our school, we're all supposed to fight the person. In our school, we're supposed to get out if we... And you can imagine if that, you know, in the case in Tennessee, Alcee would not have been probably a priority target for that person.
Hmm. In your discussions with other superintendents or people in the education department, did they honestly believe that putting up a sign that says this is a gun-free zone actually protected anybody?
Oh, yeah. They absolutely believe it. Hmm. That's the comedy of it. But the evidence is so overwhelming that's not a protection, but yet look what they do. They come right back out and say, we need even more gun-free spaces.
Wow.
It's just not the case.
No, absolutely not. So in Oregon, the Republicans helped to introduce the Safe Schools package. It includes 7 pieces of legislation to prioritize the safety of our students and faculty, including funding for school resource officers, studies to analyze school building safety, electronic communication to parents, and panic alarms for school buildings. In your personal experience, do any of those issues really stand out that are especially needed right now?
Well, I think they are. You know, look at the issue in Tennessee, a very brave 9-year-old girl.
Yes.
She lost her life trying to pull the fire alarm. And, you know, a panic button in that case would be a wonderful tool. And, you know, we have a lot of technology now, you know, automatic door locks, things that can be done to limit the access of somebody who's not supposed to be at school to certain groups of students. And the technology is there. The political will to invest in it has not been there. And I'll be curious to see how Tina Kotek responds. Think about what would have happened if a safety resource deputy that was armed had been at that school.
Yeah.
And I mean, talking about a deterrent, those things are really important. You know, I always work closely with our safety resource deputies out in Alcee. They came to our school once a week. We communicated with them regularly on all kinds of issues and goings on and rumors. And I'm telling you, I can stand here on a good foundation, a solid record. So many kids over the tenure of my career were protected by that safety resource deputy and safety resource officer connection. It is common sense. And for the fact that we ran them out of schools on the defund the police thing was once again choosing a make-believe story over all of the weighted evidence in reality. You know, in particular in Eugene, safety resource officer stopped a gunman in the parking lot a few years back. Thank God for that person. What would have happened if that person had gotten in the building? And so this is the kind of thing that I'm talking about. We have to have real, hardcore, honest discussions about reality.
So, speaking of reality, what have your colleagues said are important to them? And do they feel that staff feel threatened, or do they feel prepared at all?
Well, what you'll get is you'll get staff who will say that it's not their job to protect themselves and that it's the school's job and that if we just have a good plan. I went through this, several years back, and I finally just had a big staff meeting and brought everybody in the room because there was so much, in a small town, it goes around.
Sure.
So I said, okay, we'll have a big staff meeting, classified, certified, everybody together. And I walked in the library and everybody, I said, okay, what are our solutions? And they all fired them up. And then it was very easy to say, well, okay, so, you're going to stay with these kids, but what if your kids are in the other classroom? And then of course the mom, who's also an employee, was like, well, I got to go get my kids. Well, no, that breaks the protocol. You see how this works? The reality of it is you're going to have crazy chaos when a shooter comes out. People do erratic things in those situations. And that's why the concept of the discussion about these are the simple things we can do if a tragedy strikes, that the actions we can take and the judgments you as employees get to make. And it completely died the whole the debate down. Never had an issue after that meeting. Mm.
How much of school safety comes from out of control kids? For example, Corvallis has been having troubles recently with students actually assaulting teachers, in part, or I think actually probably because they had no punishment policy on students who were acting out.
Yeah. Well, you take all accountability. This is the hallmark of Tina Kotek's whole approach to education is, when she said, now that students have the assurance of graduation rates should improve. I mean, it's insane. Well, great, graduation rates improved, but what went down? The caliber and quality and totality of skills that students learn. And so you have to have that accountability conversation. You cannot have a system without accountability. And the government wants to pick and choose. So students are victims. They're not powerful. So therefore, it must be something the teacher did, or it must be bad parents. And there is no room for that insane mindset. In today's education system, we have to reinstitute reasonable, universal, understandable standards and expectations, both for behavior and for academic achievement.
Yeah. Well, you say taking the accountability out of education, that's not just Tina Kotek, that's the entirety of the left, and not just education, but all of life, where you just give everyone everything. Yeah. So anyway, coming up, we're going to be talking about election integrity issues. Oregon has a new scheme for voting. Arizona and more. We're talking with Mark Thielman. Stay with us. Hello, back. This is the Ask by Radio Show. We're talking today to Mark Thielman. He's actively involved in leading the charge in Oregon for education, real school choice, and election integrity. And Mark, it's that last one that we want to focus on now. Recently, Oregon has introduced a pair of bills to push ranked choice voting. Would you care to comment on that?
Well, I spoke out against that bill in person, and it's fascinating because the left has got their mindset that ranked choice voting is going to somehow free up people from the oppression of the current system. And really, what it
Democrats
does is
keep getting elected, so if we can free people up from that, I'm okay with it.
Well, the thing is, if that's the way it works, the problem with
exactly.
ranked choice voting, we saw it up in Alaska. Okay, so you get the two Republicans fighting with each other. Sarah Palin and the other gentleman, and pretty soon Republicans that don't like Sarah Palin are the opposite. They put the other Republican third. And then what you end up with is you end up with a ranked choice round in which the Democrat gets the plurality
right.
Through a series of calculations done by some people that no one in a process that no one understands.
Right, right.
And
yeah, and as a result, the third place candidate actually ended up winning. I mean, that's just absurd.
Yeah, and now you've got 2/3 of Alaskans not represented based on their values by
mm-hmm.
somebody,
but
they won the election, and that's the problem with ranked choice voting. It creates tremendous confusion. It's been tried all over the world. Europe has basically rooted it out for national elections in general. There's some cities still do it to some degree, but in general, this is a problem looking for a solution, if you will. In other words, there is no great Oregon statewide outcry decrying the evils of the current, two-party election system. I haven't seen it, and I've been pretty plugged in. But again, this is more of an opportunity for them to manipulate elections and to get non or what they call consensus candidates. So yeah. People that are milquetoast elected.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I also had offered testimony to that. And after the whole Alaska fiasco, I did some research into ranked choice voting. And this is actually something that, as long as you understand math and have some insights into how your opponents or people that are not voting for the people that you would want to, you can manipulate this. In fact, one researcher said any election system that has three or more candidates can be manipulated. When it uses yep. this kind of system. And this actually goes back into the Middle Ages, where some monks who did understand math were able to get their choice for the abbess elected instead of the actual majority. So this isn't yep. new. It's just bound to get more Democrats elected. And of course, the Democrats on this committee want us to believe that they're all for open and more fair elections. But if you look, all of the sponsors on this are all Democrats. So are we really supposed to believe that Democrats actually want fewer Democrats elected if this was to go through?
Well, what they attach to the bill is the same old club. Ready? Ranked choice voting elects more people of color and socioeconomically challenged and encourages younger people to participate in the system. And they say all that with absolutely it's scant evidence at best.
Well, and that's like saying it's going to get more Democrats elected because the people they just named mm-hmm. tend to be Democrats.
Well, that's just it. And when you get down to it, anybody who opposes this ranked choice voting is a bigot, a racist.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You know, I don't mind if the Democrats want to do this to get their own Democrat candidates, through the primary. I guess I wouldn't have a problem with that. Each party, I think, should be able to make up its own mind on how things are done. But in the general election, for the general voter who don't understand these kind of machinations, we just need a simple choice that has worked for the last 250 some years. So moving on, Carrie Lake saw her challenges to the Arizona governor's election get all the way to the Supreme Court there in Arizona, only to see most of those challenges get thrown out, except for the signature verification challenge, which we'll deal with in a second. But in 2022, Arizona saw, in my mind, some blatant in-your-face cheating happening, clearly aimed at the Republicans. Has the Arizona issues and how they were able to game the Republicans there and the blatant cheating, has that changed your thoughts and strategy about voting in elections going into 2024?
Well, it certainly harmed my confidence in the current system, any kind of mail-in ballot system. Yeah. I have very little confidence in it. The one good piece of news is that Kerry Lake was successful at getting the Supreme Court to consider and look into the signature verification. The entire system is based on the accuracy of signature verification, which is vehemently inaccurate. And my favorite is the Freedom Foundation. They've been touring around demonstrating how unions, in order to keep people from leaving the union through the Janus decision, is they now pre-print the employee signature on a union renewal card.
Wow.
So that technology, the 21st century, has rendered signature verification obsolete. It's unbelievable. Anybody who ever signed a petition, you can purchase those, and you have all these signatures. Well, the state has the best signature database,
sure,
and that's the DMV. So as long as you have that signature, with AI now, you can replicate any signature you want, including on ballots.
Well, I know that they had that kind of technology to replicate signatures going back into the 30s and 40s. So it's not surprising mm-hmm. that it has found its way into cheating in our elections. Should ranked choice be able to go forward? Because effectively, I like the way that Chuck Weiss put it in his testimony. He says that it's effectively giving some people a second vote, because if their first vote doesn't go through, their second vote does count. So that gets away from this notion of one voter, one vote. Do you see some constitutional impacts to this in terms of challenging any of that?
Well, none of it's gone to the U.S. Supreme Court, and obviously it needs to. And most of the courts have ruled in support of ranked choice voting, in particular the Ninth Circuit, not much of a surprise, obviously on the West Coast there. But their argument was bizarre, truly bizarre. So they said that the 14th Amendment is not violated because when you do the second round of voting, so you basically, let's say you have five candidates, and what they would do is they would drop the bottom two, and then you would go with three. And it violates the 14th Amendment, in fact, two ways. One is, as soon as you change the people in the pool, it actually, normally, you'd have to redo the election because
Absolutely.
It reshuffles the order by which people would support,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people would be like, well, I want to change my top three now. The other way it does is those people who are, when you drop two candidates, certain number ones and number twos, those votes are now not included in the second round of calculations. So technically, you're not voting in the second round. So what the Supreme Court and Ninth Circuit said was, well, they're still counted. They're just counted as a zero.
Oh. Yeah. Wow.
Which is bizarre. Yeah. I mean, it is a bizarre
gymnastics. That is mental gymnastics. Okay, unfortunately, we're up against the clock here. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with Mark Thielman. In our final segment, now we're talking with Mark Thielman, and we're talking in that last segment there about election integrity, and we're going to kind of roll that over here, talking about the ERIC voter roll system. We know that there are 32 states, including Oregon, who have paid to be part of the ERIC system, which stands for Electronic Registration Information Center. According to the American Policy Center, it's a membership organization ostensibly created for voter roll maintenance, but investigations have found that those supposedly clean rolls, there are millions of inactive, ineligible, and phantom voters with undeliverable addresses that appear on member states' voter rolls. And these names are used for mail-in ballot fraud, ballot box stuffing, and machine adjustments in real time. So has there been any true investigations here in Oregon regarding whether ERIC has done any substantial cleaning of our voter rolls?
Well, the answer is no, they have not.
I'm not surprised.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So does the
a couple of things on that. So we included this in our lawsuit, election integrity lawsuit, is that Judicial Watch made a big issue about this. Matter of fact, they just won a case in California in which the L.A. County is removing 1.8 million inactive voters from
mm-hmm.
their rolls,
mm-hmm.
and it's an example of what happens and why the ERIC system. I mean, once you put something in that system, they don't get rid of it. They just move it to inactive, and then it becomes a pool that anyone who has access to that system, you can reactivate that person without their knowledge.
Thing.
And this is why it's not a secure system, and it doesn't maintain accurate voter rolls, and it's completely vulnerable to bad actor manipulation.
So in terms of cleaning the voter rolls, California, as you said, clean off more than a million. Were any of those found to have been voting that shouldn't have been voting?
Well, that's why the judge ordered L.A. County that they had to clean them up, because absolutely there were several, I think tens of thousands that actually voted that were on the inactive voter list. But strangely, they were made active shortly before ballots were mailed out. And then 2 weeks later, they were moved back to inactive. So you activate them, the ballot goes out in the mail, then you inactivate them, and hopefully without the non-participatory voter ever finding out. Well, obviously, some of them found out, and then they found out that they voted. That's part of why Judicial Watch picked that up.
Wow. In terms of ERIC itself, I know that they had looked into the company, and apparently they were using a fictitious physical address for themselves. That's not at all
True. Suspicious. No, but remember, because, you know, they felt like they were the target of evil conservatives, so they didn't want to have an actual physical address, and then all their servers are non-secure, you know, and tied with Chinese server companies, et cetera. I mean, and some of those things have been addressed, or, you know, supposedly addressed, but the whole organization, you know, which originally was a George Soros-backed entity.
Yes.
The entire organization is corrupt. The whole system needs to be thrown out and not used.
Yeah. Well, 32 states, that's clearly not just Democrat states, that's including some Republicans as well. Does Oregon itself allow citizen voters to look into who's actually listed on the rolls, or are they completely kept out of reach by the Secretary of State?
Well, supposedly they can call the Secretary of State's office and they can or they can do a public records request. But as you know, they're working to make that much more difficult based on, quote, ballot secrecy, and they can't verify who you are over the phone, but they can certainly verify who you are when you vote by mail and never come in person. I mean, it's, again, it's mental gymnastics.
Yeah. Well, when you were guys were filing your court cases, what was the state's response to that? Because they were essentially arguing that you should not be able to audit the state's voter rolls or how it counts elections because you as a citizen shouldn't have that right. Meanwhile, the state thinks they can audit you for any reason. Your taxes, you get a few dollars off, and suddenly they want to investigate all of your finances. Did they not see the hypocrisy there?
Well, the downside is the hypocrisy argument is not an argument they even acknowledge. Well, of course, we can do that. We're the good government. We're the morally unquestionable. We're the people in charge, and without us, the society would not run. You have to remember,
I'm pretty sure that's what the Nazis said.
Well, that's exactly what the Nazis said and did, by the way. The and the Nazis were very good at creating every ill in German society was somehow tied back to some Jewish entity or person.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's no different now. It's some evil conservative. And the whole issue is integrity is about confidence.
Yep.
You know, we had a president say that we had to bail out everybody at Silicon Valley Bank.
Yep. But
full bailouts, because we can't risk a loss of confidence in the banking system.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, they sabotage the voting and election, and somehow we're supposed to have confidence in that. Unfortunately, Mark, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It was awesome.
As I said in my speech to the Capital City Republican women a couple of weeks back, that's show 1310, if you want to give it a listen, we have to face the brutal facts. And one of those is that we are at war here in this country. News broke after we talked with Mark that the insane George Soros-appointed Manhattan DA decided to indict President Trump. Of course it's political. And this one-sided abuse of the formerly known as the justice system has been going on for years. It's been behind the scenes, mostly, trying it out and establishing legal precedent, but then we saw it in full view in 2016. Hillary destroyed evidence that was under subpoena right in full view. They then invent crimes and use disinformation in the legal system to go after Trump. Look, regarding the Trump situation, who was charged with crimes as a businessman, ask yourself, when did the Justice Department last indict the CEO of Disney, or Amazon, or Microsoft? Of course it's political, and of course it's war. And once you accept that, the question becomes, what will you do? That's the question in the year ahead. Get involved, stand up. Do not be silent, and more so now than ever, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.